51. Full Circle. This is all we will say at this time. If you wish more, seek these waters in person and overcome the tests we have created. Only in this will you earn our respect. The Parshman of Moash's new sledge crew didn't like him. That didn't bother him. Lately, he didn't much like himself. He didn't expect or need their admiration. He knew what it felt like to be beaten down, despised. When you'd been treated as they had, you didn't trust someone like Moash. You asked yourself what he was trying to get from you. After a few days of pulling their sledge, the landscape began to change. The open plains became cultivated hills. They passed great sweeping wards, artificial stone ridges, built by planting sturdy wooden barricades to collect creme during storms. The creme would harden, slowly building up a mound on the stormward side. After a few years, you raise the top of the barricade. They took generations to grow to useful sizes, but here, around the oldest, most populated centers of Alethkar, they were common. They looked like frozen waves of stone, stiff and straight on the western side, sloping and smooth on the other side. In their shadows, vast orchards spread in rows, most of the trees cultivated to grow no more than the height of a man. The western edge of those orchards was ragged with broken trees. Barriers would need to be erected to the west as well now. He expected the fused to burn the orchards, but they didn't. During a water break, Moash studied one of them. A tall woman who hovered a dozen feet in the air, toes pointed downward. Her face was more angular than those of the Parshman. She resembled a spren the way she hung there, an impression accented by her flowing clothing. Moash leaned back against his sledge and took a pull on his waterskin. Nearby, an overseer watched him and the Parshman of his crew. She was new, a replacement for the one he'd punched. A few more of the fused passed on horses, trotting the beasts with obvious familiarity. That variety doesn't fly, he thought. They can raise the darklight around themselves, but it doesn't give them lashings. Something else. He glanced back at the one nearest him, the one hovering. But that type almost never walks. It's the same kind that captured me. Kaladin wouldn't have been able to stay aloft as long as these did. He'd run out of stormlight. She's studying those orchards, Moash thought. She looks impressed. She turned in the air and soared off, long clothing rippling behind her. Those overlong robes would have been impractical for anyone else, but for a creature who almost always flew, the effect was mesmerizing. This isn't what I was supposed to be like, Moash said. Nearby, one of the Parshmen of his crew grunted.
Tell me about it, human.
Moash glanced at the man who had settled down in the shade of their lumber-laden sledge. The Parshman was tall, with rough hands, mostly dark skin, marbled with lines of red. The others had called him Sa, a simple Alethi Dark Eyes name. Moash nodded his chin toward the Voidbringers. They were supposed to sweep in relentlessly, destroying everything in their path. They are literally incarnations of destruction.
And?
Saw asked. And that one, Moash said, pointing toward the flying Voidbringer, is pleased to find these orchards here. They only burned a few towns. They seem intent on keeping Revelar working it. Moash shook his head. This was supposed to be an apocalypse, but you don't farm an apocalypse.
Saw grunted again.
He didn't seem to know any more about this than Moash did, but why should he? He'd grown up in a rural community in Alethkar. Everything he knew about history and religion, he'd have heard filtered through the human perspective.
You shouldn't speak so casually about the fused human, Sa said, standing up. They're dangerous.
Don't know about that, Moash said, as two more passed overhead. The one I killed went down easy enough, though I don't think she was expecting me to be able to fight back. He handed his waterskin to the overseer as she came around for them. Then he glanced at Saw, who was staring at him, slack-jawed. Probably shouldn't have mentioned killing one of their guards, Moash thought, walking to his place in line, last, closest to the sledge, so he stared at a sweaty parchment back all day. They started up again, and Moash expected another long day's work. These orchards meant Kolinar itself was a little over a day's hike away at an easy pace. He figured the Voidbringers would push them hard to reach the capital by nightfall. He was surprised, then, when the army diverged from the direct route. They wove between some hillsides until they reached a town, one of the many suburbs of Kolinar. He couldn't recall the name. The tavern had been nice and welcoming to caravaneers. Clearly there were other Voidbringer armies moving through Alethkar, because they'd obviously seized this city days, if not weeks ago. Parshman patrolled it, and the only humans he saw were already working the fields. Once the army arrived, the Voidbringers surprised Moash again by selecting some of the wagon pullers and setting them free. They were the weaklings, the ones who had fared worst on the road. The overseers sent them trudging toward Kolinar, which was still too far off to see. They're trying to burden the city with refugees, Moash thought. Ones that aren't fit to work or fight anymore. The main bulk of the army moved into the large storm bunkers in this suburb. They wouldn't attack the city immediately. The Voidbringers would rest their armies, prepare, and besiege. In his youth, he'd wondered why there weren't any suburbs closer than a day's walk from Kolinar. In fact, there was nothing between its walls and here, only empty flats. Even the hills there had been mined down centuries ago. The purpose was clear to him now. If you wanted to lay siege to Kolinar, this was the closest you could put your army. You couldn't camp in the city's shadow. You'd be swept away by the first storm. In the town, the supply sledges were split, some sent down one street, which looked hauntingly empty to him, while his went down another. They actually passed the tavern he'd preferred, the Fallen Tower. He could see the glyph etched into the leeward stone. Finally, his crew was called to a halt, and he let go of the rope, stretching his hands and letting out a relieved sigh. They'd been sent to a large open ground near some warehouses where parshmen were cutting lumber. A lumber yard? He thought, then felt stupid. After hauling wood all this way, what else would he expect? Still, a lumber yard. Like those back in the war camps. He started laughing. Don't be so jovial, human, spat one of the overseers. You're to spend the next few weeks working here, building siege equipment. When the assault happens, you'll be at the front, running a ladder toward Kolinar's infamous walls. Moash laughed even harder. It consumed him, shook him. He couldn't stop. He laughed helplessly until, short of breath, he dizzily lay back on the hard stone ground, tears leaking down the sides of his face.
We have investigated this woman, Moraes' newest letter to Shallan read. Ishna has overinflated her importance to you. She was indeed involved in espionage for House Hammeradin, as she told you, but she was merely an assistant to the true spies. We have determined that she is safe to allow close to you, though her loyalties should not be trusted too far. If you eliminate her, we will help cover up the disappearance, at your request. But we have no objection to you retaining her services. Shallan sighed, settling back in her seat, where she waited outside King Elokar's audience chamber. She'd found this paper unexpectedly in her satchel. So much for hoping Ishna had information about the ghost bloods she could use. The letter practically boiled with possessiveness. They would allow Ishna to be close to her? Storms, they acted like they owned her already. She shook her head, then rummaged in her satchel, taking out a small sphere pouch. It would look unremarkable to anyone inspecting it, for they wouldn't know that she'd transformed it with a small but simple illusion, Though it appeared violet, it was actually white. The interesting thing about it was not the illusion itself, but how she was powering it. She'd practiced before with attaching an illusion to pattern, or to a location, but she'd always needed to power it with her own stormlight. This one, however, she'd attached to a sphere inside the pouch. She was going on 4 hours now with the light weaving needing no extra stormlight from her. She'd needed only to create it, then affix it to the sphere. Slowly, the light had been draining from the sapphire mark, just like a fabrial draining its gemstone. She'd even left the pouch alone in her rooms when going out, and the illusion had still been in place when she'd returned. This had begun as an experiment on how she could help Dalinar create his illusory maps of the world, then leave them for him without her having to remain in the meeting. Now, however, she was seeing all kinds of possible applications. The door opened, and she dropped the pouch back into her satchel. A master servant ushered a few merchants out of the king's presence. Then the servant bowed to Shallan, waving her in. She stepped hesitantly into the audience chamber, a room in Urethiru with a fine blue and green rug and stuffed with furniture. Diamonds shone from lamps, and Elokar had ordered the walls painted, obscuring the strata. The king himself, in a blue Kolin uniform, was unrolling a map onto a large table at the side of the room. "Was there another, Helt?" he asked the master servant. "I thought I was done for the—" He trailed off as he turned. "Brightness Shallan, were you waiting out there? You could have seen me immediately." "I didn't want to be a bother," Shallan said, stepping over to him as the master servant prepared refreshment. The map on the table showed Kolinar, a grand city, which seemed every bit as impressive as Vaidenar. Papers in a pile beside it looked to have the final reports from Spanreads in the city, and a wizened Ardent sat near them, ready to read for the king or take notes at his request. "I think we're almost ready," the king said, noting her interest. "The delay has been nearly insufferable, but requisite, I'm sure. Captain Kaladin did want to practice flying other people before bringing my royal person. I can respect that."
"He's asked me to fly with him above the storm to Thalen City," Shallan said, "to open the oath gate there. He's overly worried about dropping people, but if he does that to me, I'll have stormlight of my own and should survive the fall."
"Excellent," Elokar said. "Yes, a fine solution. But then you didn't come here to talk about this. What is your request of me?"
"Actually," Shallan said, "could I talk to you in private for a moment, Your Majesty?" He frowned, but then ordered his people to step out into the hallway. When two guards from Bridge 13 hesitated, the king was firm.
"She's a knight radiant," he said. "What do you think is going to happen to me?"
They filed out, leaving the two of them beside Elokar's table. Shallan took a deep breath, then changed her face. Not to that of Vale or Radiant, not one of her secrets, but instead to an illusion of Adolin. It was still surprisingly uncomfortable for her to do it in front of someone. She'd still been telling most people that she was of the Elsecallers like Yasna, so they wouldn't know of her ability to become other people. Elokar jumped.
"Ah," he said. "Ah, that's right."
"Your Majesty," Shallan said, changing her face and body to look like that of a cleaning woman she'd sketched earlier. "I'm worried that your mission will not be as simple as you think." The letters out of Kolinar, the last ones they'd gotten, were frightened, worried things. They spoke of riots, of darkness, of Spren taking form and hurting people. Shallan changed her face to that of a soldier. "I've been preparing a team of spies," she explained, "specializing in infiltration and information gathering. I've been keeping my focus quiet, for obvious reasons. I would like to offer my services for your mission."
"I'm not certain," Elokar said hesitantly. "If Dalinar would want me taking two of his radiants away from him."
I'm not accomplishing much for him sitting around here, Shallan said, still wearing the soldier's face. Besides, is it his mission, or is it yours?
My mission, the king said, then hesitated. But let's not fool ourselves. If he didn't want you to go,
I am not his subject, she said. Nor yours yet. I'm my own woman. You tell me. What happens if you get to Kolinar and the Oath Gate is held by the enemy? Are you going to let the bridge man just fight his way in? Or might there be a better option?
She changed her face to that of a Parsh woman she had from her older sketches.
Elokar nodded, walking around her.
A team, you say? Of spies? Interesting.
A short time later, Shallan left the room carrying, tucked into her safe pouch, a formal royal request to Dalinar for Shallan's aid on the mission. Kaladin had said he felt comfortable bringing 6 people, other than a few bridgemen, who could fly on their own. Adolin and Elokar would leave room for 4 others. She tucked Elokar's request into her safe pouch, beside the letter from Marais. I just need to be away from this place, Shallan thought. I need to be away from them and from Yasna, at least until I can figure out what I want. A part of her knew what she was doing. It was getting harder to hide things in the back of her mind and ignore them, now that she'd spoken ideals. Instead, she was fleeing. But she could help the group going to Kolinar. And it did feel exciting, the idea of going to the city and finding the secrets there. She wasn't only running. She'd also be helping Adolin reclaim his home. Pattern hummed from her skirts, and she hummed along with him.